when we were putting down the ANC charter, we thought, should we do militant operations, targeted operations against our enemy? Or should we create a corporate franchise that will bring one-third of the ANC's budget so people won't go to Zimbabwe or Botswana for their financial services? Get the fuck out of here, Brian Townsend. You're going to have to leave that in. Okay, this passage is from Battling the Prince, A Woman's Fight for Democracy by Claire Schneider Hall. Claire and I spoke about this book in this room. It was some episode. Maybe Carl will link it, maybe he won't. You should learn how to search this shit. But we talk about this book. This is from Chapter 5 called The Royalist Mindset. And this passage begins on page 131. Ingratiating yourself to a powermonger for personal gain makes sense, but I have also observed, during my forays into Delaware politics, another dynamic, in which those assuming a deferential posture gather nothing tangible, just the pleasure of basking in power's glow. Having been educated to be an independent thinker who lives in accordance with my own professed principles, and who has developed the democratic courage to defend them, I could not comprehend the willingness of so many ostensibly autonomous, mostly retired people to kowtow to the Speaker of the House, no matter what she did, no matter what he did. He had no power over them, yet they still kissed his ring. I wanted to say, you do not work for him. You are not married to him. He's not your dad. Why won't you stand up to him? Because I can see no material basis for their obsequiousness. They do not quite fit Veroli's definition of courtiers, hence I refer to them as minions. And here is the key point. Both courtiers and minions assume a submissive posture towards their rulers, more appropriate to a royalist regime than to a democratic republic. From the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. Hello, this is Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Welcome to it. As always, we have Kay Forster Stomberg on the knobs and buttons. Our friend Bill is here. And we have a new guest. We've never had, I don't think we've had a county council person. I think this is our first county council person. From the Newcastle County Council, from... we call it Southern Newcastle County. That's fair, Southern Newcastle County. Kevin Kaneko. Kevin, hello.
Thanks. Thanks for letting me be here. Fan of your podcast. Always interesting stuff and always keeping it real. So happy to be here and have this a good discussion over the
Some next people aren't time. Ready for how real it can be. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, so you get the first question. You might have heard this before. Most people get this. Some people don't. Where did you grow up? What was it like? And how did you find yourself in a position of public service or wanting to do public service?
Yeah, no. So I am a, as they disparagingly call me during the campaign, a transplant. I grew up in Staten Island, New York at the time and moved to all over the country because I served in the Army for about a decade of my life on the active duty side. I lived in Hawaii. I lived in Tennessee. I lived in Georgia. I lived in a bunch of places. And then my last active duty station was down at Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland. And that's kind of brought me to the wonderful Delmarva region that we live in. And I was looking around and bought a house just north of Middletown, essentially, to kind of settle down a little bit. I went to law school, went up to Widener, Delaware Law School, got my degree there and became a public defender. And it's been a great ride since then. So,
and you're a public defender in Cecil County.
Correct. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about that before. There was some, I mean, Not that I was confused. I didn't know, actually.
Yeah. So no conflicts of interest. There's no conflict. Any pending cases within this room.
Correct. Any Delaware public defender who's actively defending me right now, you don't have to worry about it. This is all on the side. There's no, as far as I know.
No, like I tell people, you know, if you get a DUI going out to Chesapeake City, I can help you, but I can't do it in Delaware.
Military. How'd you find yourself joining the military? What branch? Like what was that? How did you get in it in your head that was what you wanted to do? And then what did you wind up doing?
Yeah. So listen, I went to school in upstate New York to do an undergrad, political science, typical guy. And I thought I was going to go to law school straight out. But then, 22-year-old Kevin wanted to apparently jump out of helicopters and do other crazy shit. So I decided, hey, here's an idea. I'm gonna join the Army, and I got commissioned as an officer, became an ordnance officer, so dealt with lots of things that go boom, lots of ammunition.
Now you deal with a different kind of ordnance.
Exactly. I like that.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
There you go. And 2011, they go, all right, Kevin, we're gonna assign you to Hawaii. And I'm thinking, oh man, this is awesome. I'm going out to Hawaii. Sure enough, I go out to Hawaii, and about within 15, 20 days, I go, hey, Kevin, we got more news for you. You're going to Afghanistan. And I said, oh, shit. All right. So I guess this is...
Oh, dude, the whole circumnavigation of the globe.
Yeah, this is getting real. And then I served a year in Afghanistan from then, came back to Hawaii, and I, again, served another 6-7 years in active duty. But yeah, you know, just you know, I wanted... I was the young guy that was... Wanted adventure, wanted something, and kind of a little corny to say it, but believe in public service in all capacities, and I felt this was a way I could do it.
You know what you could have done, you know, because you wanted that rush that high. You should have done more drugs.
Well,
I mean, you know, there's other ways to point it, because I don't really know how to ask this question, so I'm just going to ask it the way I was thinking it when you were telling it. So, you're an ordnance guy, you're the bomb guy, and you're in Afghanistan as the bomb guy. That doesn't sound great. did you ever think like, man, this kind of isn't that great? Or you were just like focused on whatever you did or whatever was going on
Would
there?
Would this have been like 10 years into the war as well?
Yes, yes. Right. Actually, I went during if you guys remember, Obama had a surge.
Oh, the surge. Yeah. You were a surger.
I was a surger.
Okay.
There was 100, and people forget this, there was 120,000 United States troops deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan around 2011. There was a lot of people there. I was part of that surge that went there. But to your point, Rob, yeah, you know, listen, when I was in Afghanistan and it's 125 degrees and you're in a full kit and there's sand blowing in your face and you're like, wow, I'm far away from home. I'm far away from the place I grew up. Did I have my doubts? Maybe, but at the same time, you know, it was one of the things we look out to our people to our left and our right, and all the politics aside, I was there for a different reason. I wasn't really involved in the politics at that time, but there was a lot of shit happening, and I was right by the Pakistani border with Regional Command East. Saw a lot, and I will tell you though, that place is it's a different world, literally. You know, there's people with no electricity. I remember I took out a cell phone. And I said, hey, to these kids, the little Afghan kids, like 7-8 years old, and we had an iPhone, and I showed them the ocean, and there was waves and surfing. And it was the first time these kids had ever saw the ocean. They didn't have a concept of it, because Afghanistan is a landlocked country, and without electricity, without modern technology, they don't know what that is. They only know a few rivers. They didn't know what an ocean was. So it was an incredibly eye-opening moment for me to see how big this world is and how often complex it can be.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been to Afghanistan, but I've been to places where people live in conditions that it's hard to describe.
Yeah.
You know, and Afghanistan's one of them. And unfortunately, I hope this doesn't come as a huge surprise to you or upset you in any way, but we lost that one. We took a beating. Mm-hmm. Well, no, the Taliban guys, I think they're back in charge.
Yeah, Rob, listen, I on that war, there was a lot. That war hurt me. It hurt me in the way I think that some Vietnam guys hurt them, in the way that, you know, we went there, we did what we had to do, we fought, we did what we had to do, but public policy wise, foreign policy wise, it was a goddamn disaster, right? I mean, and then at the end of the day, we spent 20 years, we spent billions of dollars, we spent thousands of Americans' lives, and what did we accomplish? And, you know, I know some veterans will get upset when I say things like that, but at the end of the day, can we look at this when we make other bad foreign policy decisions so other Americans who are 18, 19, don't get their arms blown off, don't get their insides blown out? Because it's always not the rich people. It's not the rich people in Westchester County that go to these wars. It's the people in East Wilmington who go to these wars. It's the people in Harlem. It's the people in other more economically depressed areas of our country that we send to these wars. It's not the rich. It's not the kid that's going to whatever private school for $40,000 a year. It's always the poor in this country. That's been the history of our country, and it's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's going to be a theme, maybe not in this particular program, but coming up, about like learning lessons. Like, that's the problem I have, is like, the neoliberal elite don't seem to ever learn any. You know, we're dealing with that in some, we're dealing with that now. You know, it's gone all the way back. You know, Obama had a surge. Imagine sending more people to this fucking thing when we know that, you know, we got beat. You know, somebody said, well, it was Bush. Well, go back to Clinton. You know, just tearing down the welfare state and sending it abroad.
Hey, Rob,
so are they going to learn this lesson?
No, they're not. I don't think right now this modern Democratic Party is ready to learn that lesson. I think, I mean, Rob or Carl could correct me on this, but there was one Democrat that voted against that war in Iraq back in 2003 in the House.
Was it Barbara Lee?
Yeah, I think it was Barbara Lee from California. Mm-hmm. One. Yeah. That's bad. I mean, when we realize how bad this intelligence was, Democrats are too willing at times to just comply because they think this is going to be politically popular or they don't want to stand up. We have to have more of a backbone in the Democratic Party. And, you know, I've said that from day one.
Well, I'm not going to make an answer for all of the foreign policy decisions of the United States in the last 100 years. That's certainly not going to happen. Actually, this is probably a good time to sort of switch gears a little bit, because I guess because we work in these waters, we've actually covered county land use probably as much as the news journal has covered it. I mean, and they do have covered it in their defense. Yeah, and that's in your wheelhouse, so to speak. How did you get that as high of a priority? And it's funny because you look like you had that priority and then got on the council, which is one of their biggest things. So you seem actually particularly suited to do this kind of stuff. So land use, what is it? How did you get into it?
Yeah, so one of the key things that got me really interested in county council and land use was, there was an old historic farmhouse in the back of a new development called Bayberry North that was just north of Middletown. And they just let this farmhouse deteriorate over years. And they had submitted a plan to the council, the rich developers that work with Blindham Homes and Pam Scott, who is a wealthy attorney. Don't get me started on this, but
we'll get you started. I set this up to not get you started.
What are your thoughts on about Cahovania?
You know, they had told me, and they had told the county, that we're going to restore this home. And what they did was something called demolition by neglect. They put no money into this farmhouse. They put no money into open space preservation around this area, and they let the home basically become a blight. So all the local neighbors at this point were like, well, what the fuck? Like, we can't have this happen, right? We need to deal with this. And eventually, they got us to a point where it was so unpopular that a lot of our neighbors were like, well, yeah, we got to get rid of this. And then I started researching land use laws and the UDC in Newcastle County. And I realized how rigged the Uniform Development Code is for the wealthy. is for the land use attorneys and is for developers. And how so few people, so ordinary neighbors and ordinary working people don't understand it. And that got me really annoyed. And I'll be honest, that got me a little pissed off. So I said, screw this. I'm getting involved. Eventually, that's what began my journey to the county council. And I'm not a land use attorney. That's not my specialty. But I can read the law. And I'm tired of land use attorneys in this county telling me, well, this is the way it has to be. Why? Because you and 17 other land use attorneys said that? That's nonsense. We got to push back more on that, Rob. And we got to stand up for people to make sure that we don't have these problems anymore.
Carl, we have members of the bar, of various bars here. And I think it would be remiss if I didn't mention, it's the same thing we're doing in the corporate bar here. It's just like, you give the store away. I mean, you have to. I mean, they have all the money. The county probably could have spent less money just buying the property and refurbishing the house and making it a park than they spent doing whatever the fuck this all is. You know what I mean? But we don't do that. That's not what we're up to.
No, we don't do that, Rob, because what we do is we sell out to developers in this county time and time again. Because I'm not a guy to hold back. Carl knows this, right? But I'm the type of person that will tell you, hey, I don't think you should be taking a $600 check from a developer and then all of a sudden deciding what his development plan is. I just don't see how that can be productive. But for too long in this county, that's the way business has been done. And if you go look at the county finance reports of county council members, a lot of them are funded by developers. And that, to me, is an issue. Because, you know, county council is one of those things that's actually, I think it's a very important legislative body, but it's not the sexy body, right? Everybody's talking about Dover. Everybody's talking about
people like sexy bodies. I mean, that's the whole, I mean, that's kind of part of the definition, I think.
You know, everybody's talking about the legislature, and I get it. Listen, I'm very in tune to what's going on in the legislature, but I wish more people would step in and follow local county politics in Sussex County, in Newcastle County, down in Dover, Dover. In Kent.
Talking about the levy court.
The levy court. They have a levy court.
They got a levy court. They're this state school. Is so, look, I'm sorry to have to do it again, but you know, levy court.
Levy
court. You kind of have to do it. So we had to introduce you to this. When we redid the studio, I got this. We had the idea before, and then I got the bell. So when a random sort of Delaware Way thing comes up, it's like, oh, yeah, the levy court runs everything. You got, like, you know, if you mentioned the court of chancery, if you actually call it the chancery court and not the court of chancery by mistake, which people continually do, some of them are in this room. I feel like I have to stand up for chance on this one. But, yeah, so we ring that bell. And definitely still having a levy court and calling it that is absolutely bizarre. But I appreciate that. I think that's a great message that – I mean, the reason it resonates with me and land use is boring is because it does correlate to what we see, or, you know, it is what we're seeing in the corporate bar. It is what we're seeing in real estate in Wilmington. You know, it is why Sussex County looks the way it does. It's the tension between capital and work. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it is. So, yeah, I appreciate that very much.
Well, I'd say there's another tension too, and it's kind of like the transplants versus the entitled,
right?
I.e. the lifers, I guess. And I was wondering if you could maybe talk to that tension and how maybe you manage that coming from a district south of the canal, but also working within Newcastle County more broadly, where, like, you know, I grew up in North Wilmington. Everything feels pretty rigid there. Like, you can still, there are still variances and land use still plays a major role up there, but it's not the free for all that I think we kind of think about it is down in your neck of the woods.
Well, no, it's a great question, and we do have that conflict of, you know, the transplants, which, by the way, is like almost 30-40% of the state by now.
Right.
We should have kept you bastards out.
Well, yeah, when you prioritize tourism in like the year 2000, like, yeah, no shit.
And you why did my buddy Owen's parents move? Well, they wanted to be closer to their grandkid, obviously, and family. But it was cheaper here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're retired, you move here because we don't charge you anything to live here.
Yep.
I just talked to, what's his name? Lavender, the Lavender guy, about it. Like, yeah, if you make it so people come here because they don't want to pay anything, a lot of people are going to come.
Right. No, and we do have this interesting conflict with the lifers, like you said, especially south of the canal, because it's much more of a rural area. You know, we have families that have been on farms for 170 years.
That is some credibility, I will admit.
Yeah, right? and so there is...
You're multiple lifers at that point.
The people
whose family own the house. That they're like, yeah.
There is some interesting tension there. But what I've said is, listen, at the end of the day, you know, this is not moving... When you move from New Jersey to Delaware, you're not moving to a different country, okay? You're going over the bridge and you're living in Delaware. I'm trying, you know, so I've always tried to work hard to get people to come together for common solutions of what that is. But I think the land use process in Southern Newcastle County has been the wild, wild west in the way that these developments get approved very quickly, I think without a lot of public input. And listen, the reason I'm on county council is because a lot of people said, Kevin's right. Kevin fighting against developers is right. Now, the Delaware Way people hated everything I said. They found a primary opponent against me. They did everything they could at the end to defeat me. There's multiple council members who spent $600 checks because, like, we don't want that guy. But at the end of the day, I got 69% of the vote in a primary against a guy who's been here his whole life, blah, 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 blah. Because it's not always about sometimes that. It's about what your message is. And people just had enough down there of just over-ramping and letting developers get away with murder.
Speaking of lessons learned, I wish people would learn that lesson. All of this, you know, Pete running like challengers to try to stop some of this, what we call the Carl Stomberg insurgents. It's not working. No, and then you're not. Just making yourself mad. You just got beat. Nobody wants what you're selling, kind of like. What's that?
I don't call them that.
What did I say?
The Carl Stomberg insurgents?
Oh, yeah, that's what I call it.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
I don't call it.
It would be weird if you called it that.
Because my insurgents. Yeah, my insurgency.
Yeah, you'd have to just say mine, or like, it would be weird if you used the third person. So I do want to, this could go anywhere, but it's something that I'm really closely sort of involved with that's a Newcastle County thing. Bill, you can turn your thing off if you want.
I actually have one more land use question.
Do you have one more land
use question? Yeah, do you mind? I think it's because you mentioned...
Yes, I do. I do not mind.
Okay,
please ask.
Thank you. This one I had some thought on. But so it sounds like residential developers are a particular problem.
Yeah.
There's also the like commercial industrial factor in Newcastle County.
Yes.
And so I kind of want to ask when is it appropriate to have a warehouse in Newcastle County? And I guess pair that kind of with the thought, this is my personal belief, is haven't we kind of bought into this system? Like if we want to order something from Amazon and get it in 12 hours, if we want to Uber dinner tonight over to my house, at what point is it necessary to have inconveniences? If this is sort of the part of the social contract now.
Yeah, no, listen, it's a tough issue because what I've said about warehouses is that they need to be in appropriate locations. Okay. So if you're putting a warehouse in between three developments and you're putting 18 wheelers with big emissions, with big noise, with big truck traffic areas, that's affecting people's quality of life. To your point though, I totally understand the reality of the modern economy and the way we're dealing with things. And Delaware they've bought into Amazon like, you know,
multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times. But it's got to be in the right locations is what I'm trying to say. The one on 13 by Delaware City, I'm okay with that because it's right there on the highway. It's not around residential communities. It's not affecting people. But if you're trying to put a big warehouse between outside of a development in which people are breathing these smokes, breathing these emissions, you know, hearing the any of us who've been on Route 1 behind a truck knows how annoying it is. You know, and
Delta. You're saying anyone who's been to Afghanistan knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it sounds like a 50 cal on top of a Humvee.
But and Del Dot will. I'm sorry, and here I am going my rant about Del Dot. But Del Dot will always tell me, "Oh, we've done a traffic study. It's gonna work fine." And yeah, there I am sitting in 50 minutes of traffic behind a truck And I'm like, yeah, thanks, random bureaucrat and Del Dot who told me that. That's obviously not the reality.
I'm gonna step in here because, first of all, I remember the guy's name. I'm sorry for calling you the Lavender guy, George Frankel. He's been such a sweet guy to me. He's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
But this is the conversation I sort of had with him. Yeah, these people don't want to hear like all that stuff. And they don't want to be inconvenienced. And they don't want to breed this and that. I grew up in a neighborhood right near Banning Park, near Conrad on Boxwood Road near Maryland Avenue. The other end of Boxwood Road was a huge General Motors plant. Some of our neighbors worked there. We drove by it all the time to go to Price's Corner, rode our bikes past it. There was a baseball field near my grandparents who lived in the same neighborhood and that place. It had the name of the avenue that was on. I can't remember. And it was just part of life. And they didn't have any problem making that into an Amazon warehouse because it was already kind of there, I guess. We were grandfathered in. Like, we get to be inconvenienced because we're already there. But these people have the resources to go. They have the resources to go far away. And because they paid for it, they are fortunate enough to be, they don't want to deal with it, what most other people would have to deal with. And I find that a very weird sort of aspect to all of this. That there's an entitlement that people have when they move to a big home in some community that basically is on top of another person's farm they had for 300 years, probably also top of slaves' graves. We can have that conversation later. But like, you're entitled to not be irritated in some way, to not see somebody. I walk out in the street, see people, hear stuff sometimes. Like, you know, just because you're so lucky to go out and live in a half a million, three quarters of a million, $1 million home in some new neighborhood, and you're lucky enough to do that, doesn't mean you don't hear a fucking truck sometimes. And again, I know that doesn't go over as a political message.
Yeah.
But that's what I think personally. You said what you personally thought. I want to say what I personally.
Yeah.
I get it. And it's a valid argument, and I get it. I have had to listen to people going, well, you're just a bunch of NIMBYs, not in my backyard. And no, not really. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to say zoning needs to make sense for character of the community, right? So if you're putting a major industrial warehouse in a residential area, I just don't know if that makes sense. I understand your concern, Rob, and I understand that, you know, these older areas that have been around a long time, they were like that, right? But we have better opportunities, in my opinion, to put these in more isolated areas at times that can allow it. And I get it. And I know, listen, and trust me, I still hear, we, you know, there's developments by Route 1 and Route 13, and we still, it's not like we don't hear any noise. And I'm not trying to say we don't have to hear noise, but what I am saying is for the environmental
electric impacts, bullet train would be super quiet.
I agree. I mean, listen, and we need more transportation services down there, right? So my whole thing, Councilman Carter's big thing down south of the canal is the two reps down there is let's build the proper infrastructure south of the canal before we put shit everywhere. Okay?
That's basically my point.
And that's my point. You know, DART bus services, other things, road widening improvements.
You're pulling me back in with bus content.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we're getting screwed down there left and right. Because developers want to make money. They want to put everything down there. You know what? Build the proper services. Don't make me wait, you know, God knows how long for a Newcastle County police officer or an EMS service to respond because you don't have enough people down there. Don't make me not have a paramedic station down there. Don't make me only have one park down there. Don't make me have enough libraries down there. So I'll tell you what, Rob, when they start building more services down there, I'll be a little more liberal about the development down there.
I like that. It's a good message. You know what it made me stop? Because, you know, I can't really see, so sometimes I'll take my glasses off and close my eyes because it's easier for me to, like, not recognize somebody's face. He's talking. It made me think of, what was the guy in The Wire? Garcetti.
Thomas.
Yeah, that's how that was his mayoral thing.
Yeah.
Well, he does have an Italian last name, and I have an Italian last name.
Maryland connections.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maryland connection.
All right.
That's it. Look. Hey. Yeah, that's so great. Okay. Did you got your question answered? You feel good about
Appreciate it?
Okay.
It's a great show.
Good question. I like that. People like that nerd shit. They don't like real. They actually don't like my part of it. That's what I hear. Anyway, so as part of my work, I dabble in police reform organizing and policy. Mm-hmm. And what I found out very quickly was that the torpedoing of Leobor reform in favor of HB 205 and 206 was a disaster. The elite freaking dabbed on us. Some people felt, you know, the need to have to take it. Some people didn't. Created a huge schism in this space. I don't want to say space, but in this environment that people do advocacy and activism in. But one of the things that it did was mandate that every department and every municipality have a police accountability board. Mm-hmm. 206, I think, did it. And lucky for us, the county executive was really interested in doing it good for reasons we can all probably assume. And he did it good. He did the best one. Of the six or seven that are created right now, and I think there's only six or seven out of 35 or 40 that are supposed to be, this one was the, we won't call it the gold standard, we'll just call it the bronze standard. We're just trying to get on the...
It placed.
Yeah, you got paid out. You know, maybe it was $1.50, but you got paid out. With Meyer moving on to greener pastures, the Henry administration is gutting the police accountability board. Here's what I mean by that. One, they're getting legal advice now from the county attorney. This is just me, my reporting. You guys can just fucking chill out over there. They've been getting advice from the county attorney about being a lot more sort of conservative, as attorneys would do, about... If you guys meet as a subcommittee and you don't have the right public records, you know, you don't have the notice and this and that, you could do this. And if you don't, you know, you say you were doing training that it says to do, but that training doesn't count. And so they're trying to kind of, it's an activist board, so they're trying to push him. He hires Jamie Leonard. Everybody knows that Jamie Leonard is hardline, speed freak, steroid. What did the guy say? He's like, you look like you're all steroided up. It's a dab on us. So, okay. A wonderful advocate and administrator, Kaylin Richards, who came from the DCJ, who went to work as their executive assistant to do really cool, like, production of the public meetings and getting the public record stuff out and coordinating all of the training, they fired her ass pretty much immediately. I think January 5th, they fired her ass. Then now you don't have an executive assistant. Now they're like, well, no public notice, so now you can't meet for a month because of we fired the person. So all of this is to say, I'm extremely concerned about this at New Castle County, and I am a resident of New Castle County as well. Are you familiar with this dynamic? What are your thoughts about what the board should be doing? How the board, if you know anything about, you know, what Meyer did to sort of convene this board, and any other thing that you would like to mention on the record here with me?
No, I mean it's a good question, Rob, and what I can tell you is, me and now Councilman Brandon Toole are the new public safety co-chairs. So this is something that I am somewhat familiar with in the ways that the Police Accountability Board, I think, is important. I do commend Matt for the work he did on it. As Marcus gets his new team in, what I would tell people is we're gonna look into it a little bit more. All right. We're going to look into where we're going with this, because, you know, again, I just got on board, Marcus just got on board, there has to be some questions about this. What the tension is exactly going on, I don't know, and I'm not gonna speculate from the Henry administration. You know, he got sworn in on January 7th, and, you know, he just put in his new police chief, he just put in his new director of public safety, and they all came on board literally 3 weeks ago. So we got to work through some of this. But I do think the Police Accountability Board does need to be meeting. I know it's something that we kind of have on our agenda to look at, but outside of that, I just can't speculate too much of what the Henry team may be thinking on that.
Fair enough. I'll leave it there since we don't want to get two people in too much trouble. These were my views. I feel like I asked that question to him. I'm working on, like, we could clip that because I didn't do any cursing or insulting anybody. Or, yeah. Like, I asked that, like,
it was very measured.
Straight, like 60 minutes. I feel like that's like a 60 minutes. Like a Mike Wallace would ask it like that. He'd be tough, but fair. No fucking around.
So what's an example of like an F-tier police accountability board? If there's only six of them, I guess.
Okay.
Is there one that's like
they're all
so
bad
pathetic?
In their own way? And I want to give a shout out to Chris Assay from the League of Women Voters, who also is No Cap's coordinator for tracking police accountability. He has the spreadsheet, we'll just say that. And he gave a little update. It was very good, actually, because not only did he give an update, he asked some questions like, who is doing this? Why are they doing it? He's like that kind of person. Beautiful. It's because he gave this update, I can answer this question. There's about six. It's hard to say because, for example, the one in Eastern Sussex started with three as a three together because they're small, and then another one added. So it's like, I want to say Ocean View, Selbyville, Fenwick, I don't, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was all done by the police chief, not a county executive running on a progressive sort of
team. Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So that's three of them, or that's actually one with four departments in it. I think there's either one in Seaford that used to be called the Police Chief's Advisory Committee, so they just changed the name of it, I think. I think there's one, technically, Georgetown has announced it, but there's no other information. Like, I don't think they've had a meeting or anything
like
that.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah,
one, like,
Dover
very shambolic.
Dover has one, I believe, that is a, like, basically, I think some other advocates in Kent County went in there to sort of have a meeting with the police chief and the mayor, and they were like, yeah, we're doing what we're doing, go fuck yourself kind of thing. And the police chief in Dover, I think, is a real piece of work anyway. So yeah, so really the only one
who's the one that racks up all the DUIs, is that Bethany Beach?
That's Clayton. Clayton had a police chief get fired for a DUI and replaced by a police chief who's going to get fired for DUI.
Okay, that's Clayton.
Yeah, that's Clayton. No, I'm tracking all this shit. Bethany is the embezzlement, the money stuff.
Oh, okay,
that's
it was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Believe me, I've...
There's a lot of craziness goes on downstate.
The other thing I want to let all of the police departments know, I know who you are, I know what you're doing, and I'm not fucking scared. Red Bar is watching. All right. I want to sort of introduce this as one last sort of fun thing to talk about, because I read a thing that I think was very thought-provoking to start this, and I'd like to end it with a little discussion based on that passage. It seems to me that there is a... really, and we sort of alluded to it before about people being mad about election results and stuff and Carl's insurgency and everything, but let's just call it what it is. The Working Families Party, candidates that the Working Families Party is working with are whipping people's asses on the doors and in the neighborhoods. Whatever you want to call that, that's what's happening. Now, the issue is that the sort of retiring older folks, they're mad about that because it's threatening what they're doing. And it seems like at the state level, in the legislature, there is a lot of acrimony within the Democratic Party. I'm doing the fucking quotes, folks. And it's spilling out into the way that they're doing their work, into the way the public has to interact with them, in the way the constituents have to interact with them, in the way that we have to talk about them or report on them or pretend like not to make them mad. So it's affecting the polity and the way we do politics in Delaware. This this irrational, childish anger. You were, I believe, endorsed by and supported by the Working Families Party. Do you feel any of that at the county level? I mean, is there any sort of like, we don't know what you're up to, and not the plant, not the transplant part, but the part that you're threatening their shit?
No, absolutely. I mean, I told Carl, I don't think I told Carl the story, but yeah, there's been some people that came up to me and said, you know, hey, I heard you ran with the Delaware Working Families Party support. Kind of like, what's up, Kevin? Like, you know, like, do you have this, you know, agenda, or what are you going to do? Because I'm the only person, you supported Dave Carter though, right?
He was pre-WFP when he first got in there, but a lot of the same people who were WFP supporters.
Right, yeah, because I'm one of the, you know, first people to actually kind of be a proudly endorsed Delaware Working Families Party. And by the way, big credit to Carl, big credit to Delaware Working Families Party. They're doing amazing things in this state. They're fighting it back against the old Delaware way of a lot of people who are just, I mean, you've seen some of the people that we've beaten. I mean, I don't even know why they were in Dover in the first place.
I mean, you mentioned this dynamic 20 minutes ago in a different context.
I get it. And it's like, these people needed to go a long time ago, and you have so much more smart, talented, diverse people now working in Dover. And I appreciate, you know, Carl and the team also reaching out, and they want to be in, you know, county and municipal elections, because that's important too. And I have absolutely heard the pushback, like the whispers, like, oh, Kevin's with the Delaware Working Families Party, you know. And it's like, no, but you know what, here's the thing, I'm gonna speak out, I'm an open speaking guy, I'm gonna tell it like it is. And I told them already, if you want to come at me back in 2028, go ahead, do it. Like Medina says, you know what, I'm not here to be a career politician. Maybe you guys want to be career politicians, but I'm here to do the right thing. I'm here to fight for working people. And if you have a problem with it, come at me, bro. Anytime. Because we kicked your ass once, we'll kick your ass again.
And I think it's to that point also, I think a lot of people have this idea that as soon as someone's endorsed by the Working Families Party, they're suddenly under, like, my thumb specifically. Like, I am some puppet master controlling all these people.
When I say Carl's on the knobs and switches, it's a double entendre, I think is what they call it.
But it's like, we supported Kevin because Kevin's great and because he has values and wants to do things that align with the things that we want to do. Same thing with Kamala Smith, Frank Burns, Medina, Sophie Felt, like, all these people we've endorsed. It's not because, like, oh, we have, like, gotten into their heads and are taking over them and doing all this stuff. It's because we endorse people who we're aligned with. And it turns out that when you talk about those values at the doors, people agree with them.
Yeah, and they agree with our progressive vision. A lot of people are tired of this 1997 version of the Democratic Party. They're tired of it. They're tired of it. They are tired of it. I'm tired of it too.
Bill Clinton, I hated it. I was there. I was, I feel like the LCD sound system song. I was there. It was weird.
You know, when you're getting screwed over each and every day by corporations, by the rich folks, and people are pushing back. And like I said, we're winning primaries because we have that bold agenda. We also, by the way, have better candidates. Okay. When you're talking about a guy like Carson, can we find somebody, by the way, Carl, who's running against him? Because we need to find, you know, can we find talent?
Executive session right now.
Was it on the agenda?
When we find talented candidates who are younger, who connect with people, who say, like I did, again, I haven't been here all my life, but Kevin, a lot of people are like, Kevin, wow, you understand my issues. You know what it's like to have to, you know, deal with the bills and a kid and doing this and the commute times, and you're not some guy who's just sitting in county council for the last 30 years collecting a paycheck. People appreciate that stuff. And I think our candidates in the Delaware Working Families Party have been those people who just come from ordinary walks of life. We're not career politicians. That resonates with people at the doors 100%. And also, by the way, we work our asses off, which they don't do.
Right. No, I mean, we've talked about both of those things tons. And yeah, the issue is, and it's to be honest, I gotta be real honest with you, everyone listening to this. The absolute meltdown of the Democratic establishment, and I, you know, obviously you're saying it's happening on the county level too, and I'm sure it's happening at the Wilmington City Council level, but at the legislature, it's just so much more It's like a horror show. It's like, you can't believe someone would be so childish as to say, we backed the wrong horse, but you know what? We're going to pretend that we didn't. You know, we're getting repeatedly beaten in big races because, as Kevin said, when you tell people, you're like, this is what we're trying to do, they're like, that actually makes a lot of sense. Yeah, we don't want the corporations to have, you know, whether it's big real estate or big builders or big banks. We don't want that. And they're like, well, okay, that sounds pretty good. Yeah. But they actually thrive off of that.
Right.
So, but the thing is, they're getting beat and they're not, the meltdown is just so good. It's fucking funny. Because it's like Val and Bethany got beat. And they're still so mad about it. It's like, it's a beautiful, it's almost like the old you mad, the Diplo thing. I feel like the Diplo guy, the meme, because it's just so funny. Because they're going to get beat again, because they're not learning lessons, as we said before.
No.
They're not learning the lessons. So it's actually funnier this way. They're acting like chumps and losers and fools. And we know that we're going to beat them again the next time.
And any smart person in politics knows one thing. When you lose an election, what you do is some self-reflection on why I lost and how can I change that. Instead, like you said, they're going into their corners, they're throwing hissy fits, and they're not realizing, well, maybe my message for years was wrong. Maybe what I was saying was wrong. Maybe, you know, and I find it amazing, and I agree with you 100%, Rob, that some people in the Delaware Democratic Party are, they're having meltdowns right now because they see us coming in, and they're mad because people like Kobe and Medina and myself will say things that they don't think we should say, and we'll say, Kevin, you can't say that. I've called certain developers crooks, for example. They say, Kevin, you can't say that.
He just did. You know, it's too late. He did it. Did it again. Crook. Oh, I did it again. My God. Three times.
You'll get a defamation lawsuit. And I said, I will absolutely say that. And I will continue to speak the truth. And I will continue to say things until we change things the way things are done here. And you know what I realized? And they don't realize, Rob? People respect that and like it. And they want to vote for you even more when you do it like that. And the old Democratic establishment doesn't get it. They rather please their donors than please the people that vote every November.
It's so small potatoes, too, because you think of donors at the national level, and you're like, okay, that's a lot of money. Think of donors at the state level, I'm like, oh, they gave you $10,000? Jesus Christ. Like, well, you know, it's just so, it seems so, they say so easily bribed, but they're also not that bright. Additionally, the one last thing I want to say about this, and then we'll close out and say goodbye. If Frank Cook yelled in my face at a caucus meeting, I'm going to be arrested. I'm not going to tell you why I'm going to be arrested. You can fill that in. I don't want to say it. I think you can probably imagine it in your mind.
We got two lawyers here.
The only person who can stop me is Larry Lambert, but he can't catch me. I'm old, but he can't fucking catch me. Yeah, this idea that people are getting bullied by some of the stupidest people in this state, that really aggravates me. That's the not funny part. The funny part was the meltdown and knowing that they're losers. This is not the funny part because some of my friends are getting bullied for no reason and some of them are lying down. I don't like that. That's not solidarity, is it? All right, folks. Kevin, I want to thank you for coming in. Thank you for having a drink with me, too.
I appreciate it, Rob.
And Carl says every time there's drinking here that we don't do a good show. This was a fucking great show.
No, I say every time we don't have a good show, there's drinking involved.
But there's always drinking. That's not a scientific thing. It's like, the three times you've had a bad show, you smoked weed. Well, I smoke weed the whole fucking time anyway. I don't see how that's a scientific measurement.
I think you saw a guy with a vowel at the end of his last name and you made sure you had red wine.
Look. This is Garcetti for mayor.
The Carcetti or Garcetti?
Garcetti. Oh, Garcetti's the L.A. guy.
Yeah.
Carcetti.
Tommy Carcetti.
Tommy Carcetti. Garcetti was the L.A. D.A. or something, yeah. Right? Didn't they prosecute the mayor too, or both?
Or Eric Garcetti? Yeah, he was mayor.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're right.
Kevin, you got anything you want to plug? any resolutions?
Do we have any shop codes for Delta 9 gummies or anything like that?
No, I got nothing to plug. It was a great conversation, but you know, let's as you know, people here who are progressives who believe in a way Delaware that shouldn't be owned by oligarchs while our country is under assault by an insane president, Elon Musk. Let us fight from the local level to the national level together. People more now than ever need to really organize, stand up, and say, screw this. And you know, I was a soldier once, and I'll be a soldier again, and now with a suit on, to say, screw you guys, I'm fighting for my country every day.
And also here at the bunker, remember, we have a real tight, pithy slogan that encompasses everything you just said. Left is best.